Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power, where we like to educate and inform. My guest today, we were going to be talking about the 16 myths of a diabetic diet. She's on the road. We are trying to reach her, and we are waiting for her to call in. So in the interim, what I'm going to be doing is sharing some information with you that I think will take care of some time until she is able to get through to us. So if nothing else, we'll be opening up the phone lines. Who knows? When people are on the road traveling, you just never know where they're going to end up. Since we're going to be talking about diet, isn't that our favorite word? Well, it isn't one of my favorites. I don't know about you, but so much of my life, that word was the big D word in my life, and it was just miserable. Well, I found out about a diet that just, I don't know that I'd really want to follow it, but I couldn't pass it up. It's called the high-flat diet. Yes, the high F-L-A-T diet. And Arthur Boyk is a gentleman that designed this specialty, and I don't know, again, that this is something that would be on my list of preferences, but I couldn't pass up sharing it with you today. There's nothing more that Arthur enjoys than sitting down, yes, to a nice weasel casserole, yeah. And he might have a side plate of bat wings. Ugh. Okay, now he's 66 years young, and maybe it's because he looks extremely healthy, who knows. He's a taxidermist from Davidstow, Cornwall, England, and he gets his meat regularly for his dinner table by regularly tucking into roadkill. So I guess they have a lot of dead bodies around on the roads in England. They say his freezer is stacked with carcasses of animals that he's found squashed on the road. Everything from hedgehog to cats to otters, even a Labrador. Well, I don't know that I want to sit at his table. He once brought a porcupine back from Canada. He says people are happy to eat an apple that has fallen out of the tree and is lying on the floor. So what's the difference? Arthur apparently has been eating roadkill since he was 13 years of age, and he's never been ill once. He strongly recommends badger sandwiches, but was disappointed with giant horseshoe bat. It tastes a bit like gray squirrel, not a lot of flavor, and a touch of fox. And fox has a pungent taste, according to Arthur, that, well, he talked a lot about it, but I guess the person that was writing this report just wasn't particularly excited about the description. However, you know, Arthur is married. Would you believe that? His wife doesn't share his preferences, and she flatly refuses to cook them because she's a vegetarian. I love it. This is a marriage. How long have they been married? Probably since they were 20. Anyway, I just thought that this was a fun story to share. And when you really are practical about things, in nature, most critters are not all that discriminating because they don't have 7-Elevens. They don't have cow farms or chicken farms or, you know, sheep farms, duck farms, whatever, to grow and have food available. So this is something when he started this habit, and if he hasn't been sick in all of his 66 years, he knows something that we don't, and he certainly isn't worried about environmental pollution. But our forefathers used to hunt squirrel. They would hunt badger. They would hunt raccoon. And I've even got recipes and some cookbooks down in my kitchen that are absolutely amazing. Possum, they would cook it. Why? Because that was the meat that was available. All kinds of birds, just about anything that was meat or was available, our forefathers would kill it and cook it. even snake. Oh, yes, this has just made your afternoon, hasn't it? This is Donna Siebel, and we are expecting our guest to call in. She is on the road. We have not yet heard from her, and if we don't, in about 10 minutes, then we'll just be opening up the phone lines for telephone calls. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you, and the people have some interesting patterns of life, and I was sent some information about different critters and different fun facts about various ones. And this one was about a chicken named Elvis who laid an egg signed by the king in Wiltshire, England in 2005. Yes, a lot of things happen in England. Very interesting place. Now, the egg was marked with a perfect letter K, and it left the farmer wondering, maybe Elvis was reborn as a chicken. Well, you never know, do you? Boy, would that be fun. But he couldn't identify himself as he tried. I mean, all he'd do is go, quack, 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 and that'd be it. And also, the oldest and the most famous chicken in the United States died in February 2006 at the grand old age of 16. Now, think about that. That is really phenomenal, because often chickens are picked off by predators, and in today's world, with our industrialization of being able to breed chickens so we can feed millions of people, they usually don't live all that long, maybe 8 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. Well, this chicken's name was Matilda. She lived to be twice the age of most chickens. She was so famous, she appeared on The Tonight Show as a feathered assistant to a magician named Keith Barton of Birmingham, Alabama. And what he did, he made her appear magically from beneath the lid of a closed pan where only an egg yolk had been before. Also, there was in 2006 a Scottish council who sought an antisocial behavior order on a rooster that crowed too early and too loudly. Now, Charlie was the name of this vocal rooster. He apparently exceeded the 30 decibel limit set by the World Health Organization, and it was demanded that the owner keep the bird silent between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. Well, most roosters I know really start doing their noise as soon as the first spark of light comes about. So during winter months, there shouldn't have been much of a problem, but during summer, well, my goodness, we have a rooster that crows in our neighborhood as early as 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. As soon as the light starts coming through, it's ready to go. And there's just so much fun information about animals, and some of it is just absolutely amazing. So I thought I would share that with you. Tidbit of some information that maybe you knew about. Sand dunes can actually sing. The natural phenomenon can last several minutes and reach 115 decibels. Singing sand dunes have been reported at some 35 deserts worldwide. Now, in 2006, scientists reported that collisions between grains of sand caused the movement of a grain to become synchronized as the outer layer of the dune resonates like a loudspeaker cone. Amazing things in nature, and it's so fascinating. But yes, they do sing. They actually do. I've seen programming on it, and it is truly, truly amazing. This is Donna Siebel, and we are waiting for our guest to call in to the show. She should be calling in, I'm hoping, in just a few minutes. But should that not be the case, we'll be opening up the phone lines a little bit earlier because of that. She is on the road traveling. I wanted to address or make a comment about something that I was sent regarding people and their automobiles. This is something that I think is so important. It's falling asleep at the wheel. This is something that is a no-no. And if you're like me, maybe you've done a lot of driving, and you have really been so tired, you just sit there and you find that your eyelids are so heavy, you can barely keep them open. Well, common sense would dictate you're driving a vehicle at a very high rate of speed, and you want to be sure you pull over to the side. And if you have to take a nap for 15 minutes, take a nap. Sometimes we get hypnotized by the road. Well, in some research that was done recently, more than half of adults admit to occasionally driving drowsy. Now, the National Sleep Foundation decided it was going to do Sleep in America, a poll on people and rest. But they said the most likely individual, that's usually going to nod off when between driving and parking. Two-thirds, they found in the research, of all drowsy driving crashes involve people under the age of 30, with males outnumbering the females 5-1. That's, to me, quite a statistic. And they say sleep deprivation in their research was the cause. And they say that teens and individuals in their 20s miss out on sleep owing to a combination of sleep patterns. And younger people naturally tend to be more alert late at night, meaning they often go to bed too late to get all the sleep they need on weekdays. They're often in school. They're studying real late at night. They've got part-time jobs. There's extracurricular activities and a lot of late-night socializing. They found the average high school senior sleeps just 6.9 hours on weeknights, which is way under what the optimal 9 hours are that's needed by most people of that age. So whenever you are going to be out driving, think of these things. If you're tired and you know you're going to be on the road for a while, stay alert, pull off. And they say when you're awake for 18 hours, it produces a driving impairment equal to having a blood alcohol level of 0.05, and 0.08 is legally drunk. That's what exhaustion does to you. Now, other groups at high risk, and I know our guest is on the line, but I'm going to finish this. Other groups at high risk for drowsy driving include night shift workers, long-haul truckers, people with untreated sleep disorders, and those with chronic insomnia. Don't drive if you're exhausted. Can't emphasize that enough. We had a friend that found, sadly, because of certain medication they were on, they developed narcolepsy. You don't want to do that. Well, our guest is with us, Karen.
Hi,
welcome to the show. Karen Chalmers is my guest today. We're going to be talking about myths of a diabetic diet. I'm so glad we were able to connect. I know you've got a busy traveling schedule.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Karen, when I started going through your material, Myths of a Diabetic Diet, I was fascinated with a lot of the information that you had in it, because you say 16 myths. And I was so relieved to see the clarity about these myths that you have in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you currently are a clinical manager for Animas Corporation, an insulin pump company.
That's correct.
You were the former director of nutrition services and coordinator of the insulin pump program at Joslin Diabetes Center.
That's right.
And you have served as the chair of the National Certification Board for Diabetes Educators, and
right.
You've gotten a lot of awards for the work that you've done. You've talked around the world, because diabetes isn't something that's just centralized to the U.S. And
right.
You've done a lot of writing. And then Amy Peterson Campbell, who worked on this with you, she
yes.
is a clinical education manager in healthcare services at Joslin Diabetes Center.
Right.
And she contributes regularly to a number of different publications, and just recently did a book with Denise Austin, who is well known around the country for her fitness attitude.
Right.
Why did you feel, with all of the publications that are out there about diabetes, that these myths, these 16 myths, had to be addressed?
Well, I think after being in the diabetes field for close to 20 years, we still continue to see people who come in and think the main goal when they have diabetes is just to stay away from sugar. And there are a lot of other myths as well. And a lot of these myths are carried down, you know, from family members or friends from years and years ago. And I guess our goal was to point out that things have changed as far as the guidelines for healthy eating with diabetes. And there are a lot of people out there needlessly torturing themselves, you know, trying to stay away from sugar and things like that when that really isn't necessary.
Well, I really like the introduction by Cynthia Shaler, who is a diabetic herself.
Right.
And it was so meaningful to me when she said she has type 1 diabetes,
mm-hmm.
and she was diagnosed with this at the age of 4.
Right.
And her father was a scientist and professor, and he and her mother got into the diet planning. They had to work with syringes, and he had to sharpen syringes himself
mm-hmm.
so that they would not be so painful to utilize. And my goodness, everything that they had to do was just overwhelming, but they were doing what was understood at that time. They didn't
exactly.
have the information like we've got today. And she said the diabetic or the diabetes Paleolithic period. That's how she describes it, and I thought, okay, that seems to be a good deal. And it brought back a memory of a girl that I knew in school. Her name was Karen, and she was diabetic, and she had the worst color in her skin tone, and
mm-hmm.
she consumed sugar by the tum, and she was skinny as a rail, and she
right.
had insulin injections every day.
Right.
And it was almost as if, when you know, being a young teenager, she was in rebellion against being told she couldn't have sugar, this type of thing.
Right.
And here you bring out such wonderful information. Let's start off right at the beginning talking about sugar. And it's not the bad guy that it's been made out to be.
That's right. Anyone that's coming in that has diabetes and has come in to learn about food, what we teach them would be the same thing that I would teach anyone that just wants to learn how to eat healthy, whether or not they have diabetes or not. So really, there isn't really such a thing as a diabetic diet any longer. It's really just teaching people how to eat in a healthy way. So what I teach would be the same things that I do myself or that I would want my children to do. So there really is no difference. I mean, we want to think about sugar as simply being a carbohydrate, and it's a form of carbohydrate. And obviously a lot of dessert foods have a lot of sugar in them, and they don't have a lot of great value to them nutritionally. But we want to make sure that people, you know, focus on the right things. And the right things are really eating, you know, a moderate amount of carbohydrate, a low fat, and high fiber intake, which
mm-hmm.
is what we would recommend for anybody.
And that is what I found so very significant. There wasn't a taboo.
Right.
I have sugar. This is awful. This is bad. Because sugar is something that has always been around in one form or another. You get
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Sugar can come in a natural form, like the sugar in fruit is called fructose. The sugar in milk is called lactose. And those are just very natural sugars. We're not adding sugar to the product. And then we have sucrose, which is what we find in dessert-type items that we do add. But it still all comes down to sugar being a form of carbohydrate. So we teach people how to count carbohydrate grams so that they can, you know, keep their blood sugars fairly level and not go way overboard. But anyone without diabetes shouldn't be eating, you know, huge amounts of carbohydrate grams either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in general, it's basically good sense. It doesn't mean that someone has to give this up. And one of the many points that you bring out in this book, 16 Myths About the Diabetic Diet, is that sugar is a food additive to enhance and balance flavor by adding color and texture,
right.
which is so true.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a preservative, and it was used as a preservative for a lot of years when people had it. There were a lot
exactly.
of people who didn't have it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it adds bulk to ice cream and baked goods, helps to retain air in light-textured products, balances acidity, and lowers the freezing point of food. You bring
right.
out such good information in this book that I really, really liked it. You also address the fact that starches, you know, again, it's like anything else. It's how much are you taking in?
Mm-hmm. Did you say starches?
Yes.
Yes. Well, again, starch is just a form of carbohydrate as well. So carbohydrate is really made up of sugars, any type of sugars, and any type of starch, and fiber being the third type of carbohydrate. So obviously when we eat carbohydrate foods, we want to eat foods that may have sugar in them, but we want to try to get foods that have some fiber as well, because that helps slow the digestive process so the blood sugar doesn't shoot up as quickly after a meal. And for those of us who don't have diabetes, eating a good amount of fiber with your meals will help you to feel full a lot sooner so you don't go back for seconds and thirds.
One of the biggest challenges for most people, and this is being brought up more and more, is portion sizes.
Right.
And you talk about, for example, with starches,
mm-hmm.
that one serving is a third of a cup of whole wheat pasta. Well, someone would look at that third of a cup today and say, you have got to be kidding.
Well, you know, yeah, it's not that we expect people to eat a third of a cup, but our goal is to say, okay, this is how many portions of carbohydrate you may have at your meal. If, you know, some people may want, you know, a definite amount, so they can kind of use that as a guideline. So we would never say have a quarter of a cup or a third of a cup. We might say have three portions, so that could be a cup.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be three quarters of a cup, depending on what the portion size is. So what you really need to know is what is one portion. And every food that's out there in the supermarket actually has a portion, an actual portion size. It's not always what's written on the box or the food label. So people are kind of like at a loss because portion sizes have grown so large over the years that they're starting to look normal to us. But if you think back to when you were a child, you know, there weren't as many foods available in the supermarket and the portion sizes were a lot smaller. And you notice that, I think, particularly when you go to other countries, that when you're served meals in other countries, often the portion sizes seem very small compared to what we find in our country.
I would say that's probably true. That's one thing about America. When people come to this country and they're served breakfast
yeah.
at an IHOP, they go, oh my goodness.
Know.
You know, they go, whoa, their eyes get as big as saucers because so many of them have maybe only had, if they were lucky, a cupful of food.
Right.
You know, maybe at any meal, if that much food.
Right,
Depending on what country they come from.
Right, and we have to think about our children growing up and thinking the portion sizes that are served, you know, in the restaurants, fast foods, things like that, are really gigantic compared to what they used to be. But to them, it's completely normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, overweight, it helps to contribute to type 2 diabetes. So what's happening is a lot of our children even are getting the adult form of diabetes, which is called type 2, because we have so many overweight children in our population, as well as adults. So the type 1 person, like you talked about, the girl that you remembered from years ago who was thin, people with type 1 diabetes usually are not overweight. People with type 2 diabetes usually do have some kind of a weight problem.
And usually with a type 2, if they change their dietary programs, I know in my husband's family, diabetes runs rampant. I mean, his mother was, a major diabetic, and
mm-hmm.
just so many of the siblings. He came from a family of 10 kids.
Right.
So almost all of them got it. Now, he didn't, but he has to be aware because he could flip over into
exactly.
That.
He's at a higher risk because his parent, you know, our parents did have diabetes. And so it's particularly important for people that already have it in their family or their genetic makeup that they really, you know, keep active and keep their weight, you know, in control.
Mm-hmm. Because his brother started going into the diabetic patterning. And he was about 50 pounds overweight.
Right.
And he removed 30 pounds of that and became more active, and it wasn't there anymore.
I know. It is amazing. It doesn't necessarily go away, but it isn't, the blood sugars are in the normal range. So,
yes.
But
yes.
If he puts the weight back on again, you can almost be sure it'll be back again.
You would do
so that. That's wonderful. You know, when we see that happening, it's wonderful.
Oh, it is. It's just terrific. And, of course, he's aware, and he realizes he's totally responsible for this because nobody's forcing the food in his mouth. He's doing
exactly,
it himself.
Exactly.
You address the myth of high protein. And
right.
I was really impressed with the information you said. It is not known to most people that approximately 50 to 60% of the protein that we take in gets converted to blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something most people just don't know about. How was that discovered? Because that was, for so many, gee, if I eat a lot of protein, I'm not contributing to the sugar level in my body. How did they find out about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, what it really says, I think, is that we used to think that about 50 to 60% of protein was converted to blood sugar. But and that was from research that was done in the 1930s. But over the years, research has shown that that's not actually true, that protein, only a minimal amount of protein is converted to blood sugar. So really, protein and fat have little impact on directly on raising the blood sugar. It's mostly just carbohydrate that does that. But I think the big issue with the protein is everyone now is afraid to eat carbohydrates. So the only, and obviously we know a lot of fat isn't good, so the only other alternative is eating a huge amount of protein. And that's not always the healthiest thing either. We want to remember that protein comes from animal products, and animal products do not contain fiber. And fiber, it only comes from carbohydrates. So I think on the protein chapter, we really want to point out that although protein doesn't raise blood sugar directly, it can contribute to other problems, because when you eat animal products, which is where protein mostly comes from, you're also getting animal fat included with it, even chicken and poultry and fish. There's always going to be an amount of fat with any animal product.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things you bring out is if you take in too much protein and you have a vulnerability to kidney problems.
Right,
a number of things that can affect the internal organs. And parallel to that, they have found with older animals, like dogs and sometimes even cats, they have to be very careful about that. If they develop certain organic problems, that they have to shift them to a lower protein diet if they're having a problem with the kidneys or other certain organs. So it depends on the individual, and you need to be aware excessiveness in any level is not going to be good.
Exactly. People with diabetes are at a little higher risk for developing kidney problems. Not that they're going to, but, it just puts them at a little bit higher risk. And if they're already starting to show some protein in their urine, they really probably should, cut down just a little bit on the amount of animal product that they eat, at each meal, just by a little bit, and even that is helpful. The kidney is responsible for getting rid of the end products of protein, and so when the kidney doesn't work well, those end products can build up in the body and become, toxic to the system.
All right, now, Karen, we're going to take a break for just a moment. Stay with me, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about the 16 myths of a diabetic diet. And Karen Chalmers is my guest, and we're going to be talking more about this. If you have a friend or a family, that a member of your family that's involved with this kind of a condition, education is the key to living a healthy, happy life. This is a wonderful publication. We'll be sharing more information with you when we come back. Don't go away.
Weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, Learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we're continuing our conversation with Karen Chalmers. She's one of the authors of this book, 16 Myths of a Diabetic Diet. And I'll tell you what, you don't have to be diabetic to enjoy this. It really is very informational. And if you're like me, you're always fighting the battle of the bulge. This book gives you so many good common sense points of information that anybody could just follow this particular patterning. And, hey, it's going to benefit you. And you don't have to be an extremist. I want, Karen, something that bothers me is when people do an extreme with fat-free diet. And they advocate this, and I've seen people that have followed dietary programs like this with diabetics. I look at a change, especially in skin tone and other things, and it's not healthy. Please talk about that for a minute.
Right. I mean, first of all, it's very difficult to do fat-free. And second of all, it really isn't a good idea to go completely fat-free. When we're talking about fat, I mean, the fats we want to really try to cut down on are the animal fats. You know, the butter, skin on the chicken, you know, the fat on a piece of steak, things like that. Those are the harmful types of fat. But we do need a certain amount of fat to carry certain fat-soluble vitamins throughout our body. So it's really important. The other important thing is when back in the 80s when everyone was really on this fat-free kick and we were getting a lot of fat-free products on the market, what happened was when people weren't eating any fat, an hour or two after they ate a meal, they were hungry again. So one of the things that fat does, and not a lot of fat, just a little bit, it helps our satiety level. So what fat does is it keeps the food in our stomach a little bit longer so that our appetite doesn't come back as quickly. Now, again, there are healthy types of fats, which are the monounsaturated, polyunsaturated fats. Those are things like olive oil, canola oil, sunflower, And I don't mean large amounts, and I don't mean doing a lot of frying in fat, but it's really, we found that when people started going on fat-free diets, they actually gained weight because they were hungry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So fat really helps you get a little bit of fat with each of your meals, preferably a healthy type of fat, will help you get from one meal to the next without a lot of munching in between.
Yes, and it also is a carrier of some vitamins.
Exactly, exactly.
I found fascinating information because many people, they wouldn't associate vitamins with fat at all.
Exactly. It seems like the odd couple, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But the truth is, I think we're finally reaching a point where we're beginning to understand the integration of balance because human beings are omnivores.
Right.
And our systems are designed for this. Some people are more comfortable with certain types of fats than others are. And it basically is important we keep a balance, that we understand that all of these different components are very important to us. And it's not any one that is exclusively anything. It has to all work together.
That's exactly right.
Now, let's address diabetes and body weight. I brought
right.
up my brother-in-law who had dropped a bunch of weight and the diabetes went away. Let's talk about the myth regarding weight and weight loss.
Okay. One of the things that people think is you've probably seen over the years weight charts and you look at your height and then it tells you how much you should weigh.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I would definitely stay clear of weight charts. But what it's really important to know that will really lower your risk of a lot of problems like high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, is even losing 10% of your body weight, which isn't always our ideal weight. So sometimes people feel so overwhelmed by the amount of weight that they need to lose that it kind of sabotages their efforts. So what's important to know that just losing 10% of your body weight can decrease your risk of so many things, like I said, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol levels, high fluid retention, all of those things by just a small amount of weight loss is very beneficial. So please don't be overwhelmed and don't try to be get to your ideal weight necessarily. I think a lot of us, we're never going to get back to our high school weight. Losing a small amount of weight, 10 to 15 pounds, I've seen it make dramatic changes in people's health risk.
Oh, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes a big difference.
And right, right.
It can, one, psychologically, but two, it is amazing sometimes just the size difference in 10 pounds.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, we just don't realize, and it's just amazing. You have people who say, well, I've gotten rid of 10 pounds, and they'll go, wow, you look like a different person.
Exactly. So it isn't really the number that we're looking at, and it's really more important to go by your clothes and how they're fitting rather than getting on a scale every day. I always tell my patients, put the scale in the closet, and just stay away from it, and if you have to do it, no more than once a week. And if you weigh yourself, you want to do it first thing in the morning before you eat or drink anything. That's really your weight. And then as the day goes on, we're eating, we're drinking tea, coffee, water, all those things contribute to our weight. So really the first thing in the morning before you eat or drink is the best time to weigh yourself. But limit your time on the bathroom scale and really gauge your weight loss by your clothes and how they're fitting you.
I think that's a very good point. Now, you address some other things in your book here on the 16 myths of diabetes, the diabetic diet. You have you talk about supplementation, and I know I really think that supplementation is important in today's world. But you go into the fact that we need to be aware of supplementation and not overdo it. And I really think that that is very true, depending on, various situations. Aren't there blood tests that can be done to determine the nutritional balance in the body?
It's really kind of a difficult and lengthy process to determine whether you're deficient, you know, and it isn't something that normally would be done by your doctor necessarily. But what our goal is not to have people going out and getting all of these supplements that are really, a lot of them that are sold in some of these nutrition stores that you might see, they're not really approved by the FDA. So what that means is they can make claims on their packaging that aren't really necessarily true or helpful. And a lot of these things that people are spending a lot of money on are going in one end and out the other. And there's really no great benefit to, you know, taking large amounts of supplements. Our biggest goal with our patients is to teach them how to eat healthy so you don't need to have a supplement. If you're not eliminating any food groups, you know, if you're eating fruits and vegetables and some dairy and some, you know, protein and some fiber, you probably don't need a vitamin. But if you feel like you want to, sometimes you may be lacking because of our busy lifestyle, you could take a multivitamin, but pretty much that's all I would probably recommend. And not anything excessive, you know, 100% RDA, which it would say on the back. You don't need more than 100%. So anything extra often is excreted by the body anyway. So by eating healthy, you know, is the best way to get all the vitamins and minerals that your body needs. But if you do want to take a multivitamin, you don't have to buy anything really expensive, just something you might find at the pharmacy, just a multivitamin, and look on the back, and it should say 100% for each of the vitamins that's in it of the RDA, and that's a good bet for you.
You address exercise, and in today's world where so many are couch potatoes or what I call computer potatoes, I mean, you can sit on your little square seat for hours in front of the computer and not necessarily have the pleasure of a good movie in front of you. You're just dealing with what is the norm today. Exercise, I am a strong advocate of, and it is so important because it balances insulin levels in the body and does other things.
Right. Basically, exercise can lower your blood sugar. So if you do have diabetes, and let's say you go out to a restaurant and you overindulge a bit and you ate more than you expected, which we've all done, you know, a good idea would be to go home and jump on your exercise bike, go out for a walk, and it will help bring your blood sugar down. It's very critical to people, whether they have diabetes or not, but particularly with diabetes, to exercise. It just helps the blood sugar maintain their levels and, you know, really keeps the cells letting the blood sugar into the cells instead of building up in the bloodstream, which is, you know, when someone checks their blood sugar and it's a high level, it means they just have a lot built up in their bloodstream. We want to get the blood sugar, which is really gasoline, into our system. Because it's really, blood sugar is gasoline to our body, so it is a good thing.
Yes, it is. I know we're almost out of time here, Karen. 16 myths of a diabetic diet. Karen Hansen Chalmers is my guest. This is an excellent book for any of you. Well, you don't have to be diabetic to benefit from it. It really is some good information here. Karen, is there a website people can go to?
Yes, if you want to go to the Joslin Diabetes Center, you can go to the joslindiabetes.harvard.edu.
joslindiabetes.harvard.edu. And Joslin is J-O-S-L-I-N?
J-O-S-L-I-N, right. And you can go to the American Diabetes Association, go to diabetes.org.
Great. Karen, it's been a delight. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And thank you for being my guest today. Your book, 16 Myths of a Diabetic Diet, is very well done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Good things to share. You'll want to hear about them. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Kathleen Fillmore in Canada. Her book is going to be about the six-figure speaker. If you're a person that enjoys being in front of people, you feel like you have something special that is going to benefit them in some way, you're going to want to hear how you can make a living as a speaker and do very well with it. So Kathleen is going to be with us tomorrow, and then on Friday we're going to be talking with Rose Tree. We're going to be talking about how to cut the cords of attachment. How many times do we end up in situations where we are stuck because we haven't learned how to let go? Circumstances, past experiences, sometimes it's even a person or a particular environment. Well, we're going to find out how we can handle that tomorrow, or on Friday, excuse me. So we'll be talking with her. And just a wonderful lineup of guests. And today I just finished putting up my listing of guests for the month of June. Yes, we're packed solid during the month of June. And I think you're going to find a lot of the subject matter fascinating information. So if you want to chat with me today, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I got some information from a gentleman, Max, and I thought it was such a good statement that I wanted to share with you today. And by the way, if you have something special you'd like to send me, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. If I'm able to use the material, I'm always happy to share it on air. I cannot guarantee as to when I would be doing it or that, you know, I will be able to use it. It all depends on what goes on during the programming. But this, I thought, was very special. It's titled, Today I Will Make a Difference. And here is how it reads. Today I will make a difference. I will begin by controlling my thoughts. A person is the product of their thoughts. I want to be happy and hopeful. Therefore, I will have thoughts that are happy and hopeful. I refuse to be victimized by my circumstances. I will not let petty inconveniences such as stoplights, long lines, and traffic jams be my masters. I will avoid negativism and gossip. Optimism will be my companion and victory will be my hallmark. Today, I will make a difference. I will be grateful for the 24 hours that are before me. Time is a precious commodity. I refuse to allow what little time I have to be contaminated by self-pity, anxiety, or boredom. I will face this day with the joy of a child and the courage of a giant. I will drink each minute as though it is my last. When tomorrow comes, today will be gone forever. While it is here, I will use it for loving and giving. Today, I will make a difference. I will not let past failures haunt me, even though my life is scarred with mistakes. I refuse to rummage through my trash heap of failures. I will admit them. I will correct them. I will press on, victoriously. No failure is fatal. It's okay to stumble. I will get up. It's okay to fall. It's okay to fail. I will rise again. Today, I will make a difference. I will spend time with those I love, my spouse, my children, my family. A man can own the world but be poor for the lack of love. A man can own nothing and yet be wealthy in relationships. Today, I will spend at least 5 minutes with the significant people in my world. 5 quality minutes of talking or hugging or thanking or listening. 5 undiluted minutes with my mate, children, and friends. Today, I will make a difference. And that's by Max. And I want to say, Max, I think your words are eloquent. Nothing needs to be added. You did a beautiful job. And I'm glad to be able to share that with my listeners. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. I had a call from a woman not all that long ago, and she was, oh my goodness, we've got a caller. I hear the beep. Hi, caller. Sorry, I'll have to talk about this maybe tomorrow. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
I'm Sandy from Scottsdale, Arizona. It's nice to talk with you, Donna.
Hi, Sandy. It's a delight to be able to interact with you. And I want to be sure that I get as much information to you as I possibly can, dear, because we've only got a couple of minutes before we're going to go off air. The first thing, Sandy, is I want you to dip into that creative side of yourself. I want you to start bringing it to life in a different way. I don't care if you get involved in a hobby, take classes, just sit and daydream. I want you to allow that part of you to start growing and developing in a brand new way, because it is going to make you money. Now, this is going to sound corny, but if you were to develop websites, if you were to get into fashion design, if you were to show people 1,001 ways to do scrapbooks, I don't care what it is that pushes your creative buttons. I want you to go for it, because I'm seeing you becoming aligned with some other people, and you're going to reach a point that in your, it's like a home-based business of type, and it seems like this cooperative environment with other individuals, who knows, maybe you're going to have a purple durple cookie. I don't know what it is. All I know is that I'm seeing so much joy that every morning you will get up and say, this is so much fun. I just love doing this, because it's wild, it's wacky, it's creative, it's unique. And it's constantly demanding that you produce something new out of yourself. You pull things out of yourself that for so long have been suffocated. So I just want to say 2 words. Go, girl. Do whatever it is that it takes to bring this to life within you, because it's going to bring you so much joy. Do you have a quick question for me?
Yeah. What is your reading picking up anything on income?
Income? You are going to have a stability with income. However, for you to really expand into what you want, you are going to find yourself going towards a creative venue that's going to allow you to work with some other people.
Well, thank you.
You are very welcome, Sandy. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. I am so sorry that I don't have more time to spend with Sandy. But remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is something that offers you tremendous options and opportunities. Don't get stuck in a box. Remember, security doesn't really exist. We like to think it does, but the greatest security you have is within yourself, because you're the one that does the work. You're the one that has the ideas. You are the creator in your universe. This is Donna. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.